When you buy LG, you get so much more than just an appliance. You get more done, more cost savings, more peace of mind, and more control. Because LG appliances are designed to do more. Like washers and dryers with AI tech to take out the guesswork. Refrigerators that fit in tight spaces and keep food fresher longer. Or ranges with precise induction cooking and easy cleanup built in. All with the style you want and reliability you can count on. So you can get more from your home every day. LG appliances, so much more. Make life easier with LG. See the latest models and savings now at LG.com.
Welcome to the Lorehounds. We're your guides to the underbelly of the Empire. I'm David. This is our coverage of episode 5 and 6 of the new Star Wars animated feature, Maul Shadow Lord. Back with me this week are Jean and Brian. Jean, how are you doing this week?
I'm good, man. I'm good, you know? Cool. I want to talk about this guy. He's becoming my favorite guy.
It's going on. It is going on.
He's Brian, how you doing? My favorite guy.
I'm good. I'm good. Cool. Yeah, may the force be with you.
Thank you. Yeah, we're coming up on May the 4th. I think this series ends on May the 4th. So
it does. Yeah.
I am podcasting from the middle of Delaware in the basement of our in-laws' house. So if my audio is a little bit different, understand why. It's spring break for our school district. So we're out on a little family road trip. And speaking of Brian, sorry, not to divert too much from our main topic, but, you know, we do that on the Lorehounds from time to time. Mm-hmm. We were at three different historic sites today, plus a major museum.
Oh.
And I know you were a docent in the past at some historic sites. And I have to say today, I just had the most lovely, we as a family had the most lovely experience with just three or four or five different docents at all the places that we went. And like, shout out to anybody who volunteers their time at a historic site.
Yes.
Y'all are amazing. You know your history, you're passionate. You take your time to be with people from all kinds of walks of life and backgrounds and beliefs. Yep. And you're just there sharing the history with people. It's amazing. It's just really such a special activity. So I just had to do that because we had an amazing experience today.
Oh, that's great. That's nice. Awesome. Yeah. Yes. I love sharing the love.
Yes. You know, we got for Christmas and Hanukkah this last year, I got the family, the National Park stamp books.
Mm, yes. Oh,
and right. We got a special one because of the American Revolution, the Ken Burns documentary, Brian, which you and I covered. And so there's a special one just for that, as well as a regular Parks book. So we were in the first state today. So we got our first stamps in our book. So,
all right.
Very exciting.
Your journey begins.
Yes. So anyway, sorry to dive on too much. We're coming in hot, full spoilers, everything Star Wars on the table. We've got fresh off the digital presses, like literally moments before recording, Alicia has sent in her fresh takes and has got a big lore bomb for us on the Inquisitors and the history and who and a whole bunch of stuff. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send emails, your comm links to StarWars@thelorehounds.com. And of course, we have a Discord server. Invite you to join. It's open to everyone. We have a special bank of channels just for Star Wars and each of the pair of episodes for the Maul series have their own channel so you can discuss without worrying about spoilers. There's link trees in the show notes for everything, and we are independent podcasters, and so subscriptions are very important to us, and so I would invite you to check us out, and if you like what we do, give us a subscription. Again, links in the show notes. We're not going to cover our Star Wars background. We've done that in the last couple of episodes. Just, you know, anybody who gets a little frisky about what, you know, any of us individuals know, we have varying degrees of experience and knowledge around that. But the thing is that we're all here today because we're really enjoying the series. So let's go with that as a baseline. And I think we might as well just get into some fresh takes. Jean, you want to start us off? Just your general takes for episodes 5 and 6 before we get into the specific episodes.
They've done a great job of really making me like Darth Maul. That's my guy, you know, and I am enjoying the ride to see how he manipulates the board. I just love it.
Yeah.
I can't get enough of the guy. He's captivating. As far as a character is concerned, they've done a great job of making him captivating. And he is so cunning and so meticulous and so 2 steps ahead in his thinking that it's, he's risen up my ranks of characters that I want to see more of
right.
going forward. So, yeah. Nice. That's where I'm at. I think it's done that job for me. And, everything else is just gravy at this point.
Brian, what are you feeling? What are you thinking?
Yeah, this is, we're feeling, I think, with these 2 episodes, the intensity. It's like riding a wave and you're top of the wave and you're kind of seeing down and you're just riding it. And it's like, what is going to happen here? And so we're feeling the intensity. It's moving. It's on a force of its own. No pun intended.
Right.
And we also see in these 2 episodes the boot of the Empire and mm-hmm. how it affects a community, a city, and it's such a large city too. And just one large ship can just have such a big impact about the community. Very scary, actually.
Right.
And these 2 episodes, we're at a kind of tipping point. We have, as I mentioned, the Empire and Jannix, you know, what's going to happen to Jannix. And then we have the Syndicate, right? Is it money? Or for Maul, is it, I want an apprentice? And we are kind of trying to figure out what direction these 2 plots are going for. So it's very interesting. It's good stuff.
Nice. I don't have much to add other than I felt that 5 obviously was a more of a setup episode than 6. And then there's a lot of dramatic payoff in 6. But I just keep being amazed by the cinematic quality, the direction that the animators have taken. The camera moves are so cinema driven.
Yeah.
Right. And you feel these grand sweeps and you got these wide shots and then these close-up shots, the ending shot of Maul and 6 and that sort of hypnotic thing. I mean, it's not the ending, but it's the end of that scene. It's just incredible. It's just really good. So, but Alicia has some takes for us. So let's check out to see what she has to say.
Hello, my dark side curious. It's Alicia again, checking in by comlink after Maul Shadow Lord episodes 5 and 6. this was a fun pair of episodes. Episode 6, as everyone keeps saying, was obviously a highlight. I do love Brander Lawson's coffee addiction, although someone needs to get him a thermos for when he's like zipping around the city in in his little flying car, whatever it's called. I really like that they're showing the weak. You know, that Maul's knees, they're reminding us that they're machine parts and they need to be maintained and repaired. And Maul is just a being, just, you know, mortal and has to attend to these things as we all have to attend to our knees. Now, the complexities of Echo Diodaki and Devin having nowhere else to go, but then putting Brander and Riley in danger, that is... Ooh, that's, I understand why people are mad at them, but I'm also like, I don't know what else they were going to do and they feel the same. And, you know, we saw Echo Diodaki tell, Devin to stay behind and protect them. So Yeah, it's complicated. It's complicated. I did like when Devin called out to Riley, poor sheltered little Riley. Oh, yeah, you don't think my life was maybe a little bit different than yours when I was raised to be a child soldier? I am wondering more and more now if it may end up that Devin gets sent on the path with, say, Ventress, who was last seen in the Tales of the Underworld episodes, connecting with the path. And that's to smuggle out young Jedi Force, you know, young Force sensitive people. I don't know. Would Maul be accepted to go with them? That would be so interesting if this show ended up exploring that, because we do see Maul softening versus what he was. I wonder, though, where Riley's going to land at the end of all this, with the tension between his parents. And obviously he's seeing that his mom is working for the bad guys. It'd be interesting to see, you know, he is realizing now how privileged his life has been. He's just had to worry about sports or whatever and just be sad that his dad didn't show up enough. But we do see that Riley chose his dad to live with, and he seemed to understand that something's wrong about the Empire from the moment he went to try to visit him at the office. So, you know, this is not a slow child. On Maul's side of things, it's interesting to see dissent within the Death Watch ranks. Be interesting to see where that goes from here. It was fun seeing the mother-daughter voice acting duo in the same scene this week. So the Rena Sewell character, Brando's informant slash maybe bounce wow wow partner, she is played by Pamela Adlon, and she is a new species. They call it the Padlom species. Get it? After her. Very cool. I hope we learn more about the Padloms and see more of that. But Devin is played by Pamela Adlon's real life daughter, Gideon Adlon. So that's fun. All in all, though, the coolest thing here was, you know, other than Maul showing up to save the day, is just like the relentlessness of Marok. So the lore bomb this week, I'll be back later with, is going to be about the Inquisitors, who Marok is and his whole crew. But I leave you with this question to ponder for now. Is Spybot secretly the best character in this show? Discuss.
Jean, is Spybot?
No.
No.
But if I'm ranking in order, it is Maul, and then it is Spybot.
Gotcha. Me. Brian, see, where does Spybot rank for you?
Spybot is very high for people who remember from last episode. It's like, you got to show the love for Spybot. He's just, you know, I mean, he needs it. We all need the Spybot. I mean, my gosh, it's just so handy to have around.
Remind me the droid's name from Rebels. I can see his face, or not his face, but his shape, the little orange guy.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Come on.
It's
somebody look it up. Somebody's got the internet. I can't right now because I got a small screen. What's the dude's name? Anyway, I would love to see a spinoff with Spybot and that droid. I'm going to get added. Hopefully people will not, you know, but hey, engagement. Why is that?
Totally blanking.
Come on, somebody look. You can't look.
Yeah.
I can't. On.
Yeah, I'm finding it. I'm going to find it. Chopper.
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 Sorry, we're all old. Our synaptic.
We're fired.
Yeah, we're fired. So, totally. What about a Chopper Spybot spinoff?
I'd love that.
Like an alternate Tales thing. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Two little shitbirds getting up to some serious trash talking.
Breaking stuff. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. You know, committing genocide casually. Oh man.
Would the galaxy survive?
Yeah, right?
I don't know, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Sith and Jedi. No. Yeah, it's the droids. We gotta watch the droids.
You always gotta watch the droids.
I think so we're gonna take a quick break here, and then we'll come back and then we'll talk about episode 5. And I just want to prepare everybody, like, Alicia's got her lore bomb is like 11 minutes long. Okay. So we're going to school. So get your notebooks out, you know, settle in, get your cup of calf, because we've got some learning to do. So let us take a quick break, and then when we come back, we will talk about episode 5.
When you buy LG, you get so much more than just an appliance. You get more done, more cost savings, more peace of mind, and more control. Because LG appliances are designed to do more. Like washers and dryers with AI tech to take out the guesswork. Refrigerators that fit in tight spaces and keep food fresher longer. Or ranges with precise induction cooking and easy cleanup built in. All with the style you want and reliability you can count on. So you can get more from your home every day. LG appliances. So much more. Make life easier with LG. See the latest models and savings now at LG.com. When you buy LG, you get so much more than just an appliance. You get more done, more cost savings, more peace of mind, and more control. Because LG appliances are designed to do more. Like washers and dryers with AI tech to take out the guesswork. Refrigerators that fit in tight spaces and keep food fresher longer. Or ranges with precise induction cooking and easy cleanup built in. All with the style you want and reliability you can count on. So you can get more from your home every day. LG appliances, so much more. Make life easier with LG. See the latest models and savings now at LG.com.
And we're back. So, Chapter 5, Inquisition. Imperial forces led by Lieutenant Blake and the Jedi hunting Inquisitor Marak occupy Genic City and take over the investigation into Maul. Devin wants to stay to confront Maul, but Daki decides to escape the city to hide from the Empire. As they attempt to leave, the city is locked down and they're cut off by Imperial troopers. Despite the protests of his second-in-command, Rook Cast, Maul decides to stay in the city in hopes of making Devin his apprentice. Chief Kleiss is interrogated by the Imperials and not seen again. Blake says she has been permanently transferred. Lawson is questioned by Merrick and claims that he first encountered Maul during an ambush in the lower levels of Janix, Riley contacts his mother, Drea, who works for the Empire, and tells Riley to cooperate with the investigation. He attempts to visit Lawson at the precinct and is turned away by Two Boots. Marak investigates the scene of the firefight and sees evidence of Maul's duel with Daki and Devin. Blake allows Lawson to leave the precinct, and he comes home to find Devin and Daki seeking refuge with Riley. Thank you, Wikipedia, for that episode synopsis. Jean, to you first. Man, what's up with Ikudio Daki?
Man, I'm one of the people who was upset that he brought Devon, you know, to Lawson's crib like that. But that, I mean, come on, bro. Come on.
Right, and not leaving the city much sooner. Like, sooner you than should have been, yeah. The moment that Star gone. Destroyer broke orbit,
should have been gone. Because gone. That's what you keep telling her that she needs to do. She needs to be on the run. But then you're trying to do what? You know, go slow? Like, what's happening here? And then to show up at dude's house, I'm just like, man, come on. You can't do that. You can't put people in situations that like that. You just
really
can't.
Bad judgment.
You know, yeah. And it goes to the heart of things that I don't like about the Jedi, because they have this thing about them that sometimes, not sometimes, a lot of the times, they will put others at risk without any regard.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't understand why, as a crew, they choose that sort of violence. It's crazy. Like, what are we doing? Like, I don't respect the crew of the Jedi. I don't respect, I just can't. The guy has a kid in his house. You know that the Empire is there and you know the first place they're going to go to is the quote unquote police headquarters.
Right.
Right. You know those guys are going to be under scrutiny. Docky knows this. Mm. This is not something that is, you know, will be foreign to him. He knows the tactics. So why would he jeopardize Lawson and Lawson's family?
Right.
I hate it. And that's the thing that, you know, everything else that went on in the episode, the setup for, you know, episode 6, you know, meeting Marouk and all of that stuff. Yeah, cool. But I think that's the one thing that's going to stay with me for these two episodes.
Right.
Is that showing no care to the safety of others was really, 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 really annoying and angering. And yeah, that's where I'm at.
Brian, were you as frustrated by Iko Diodaki as Jean and I were?
Yeah, but,
well, let me interrupt you, sir, just really quickly. My frustration, I get the choice of going to Lawson and Riley's house, because, like, where else are you going to turn? I understand that. But, bro, why weren't you not out of the city the moment the Imperials showed up? You should have just been gone. And this sort of slow-moving, let's just sort of wander our way. It just boggled my mind. Sorry. So go ahead. Pick up your thoughts.
Yeah. I think they should have been out of that city, out of the planet, way even before the destroyer ever showed up. They should have been, when things were beginning to go down, they should have been gone.
Right.
And it's one of those things that I will say is, and I don't necessarily excuse that decision, because it's a really bad one, but Dakai is not on his game, right? He is, to me, a wounded animal. And Dakai.
Oh, Iko Diodaki.
Daki, sorry.
Dakai. I know.
Yeah.
Iko Diodaki.
So he is not on his game. He is literally hurt.
Well, right? Let's call him Ed.
Ed, yes.
Ed is not
the master.
That EDD was wild. I'm going to tell you that EDD was wild.
Ed. Ed is injured. He's been in a fight, and he's been fleeing from a genocide. So I'll give him some grace to say he's not thinking straight. He's not at full power, so to speak. You know, he's wounded. He's not feeling well, and he's desperate, I think. And that is, unfortunately, you know, the end of episode 5, and then we get to episode 6, are the consequences of that poor decision, right? All of a sudden, they are, as I was mentioning earlier, the stakes go up. So he did make a very poor choice. But in my head, I think I kind of maybe in a way understand it. And it, like John, I think in this moment, we could really see how the Jedi has stumbled, right? And they've stumbled pretty low until maybe we get back to the original, you know, trilogy, where we begin to see them kind of build back up, because right now they're a hot mess.
Literally. Yeah.
Yeah.
So question, I'm not sure. I don't know if I missed it, but how long between Order 66 and this series and the story that we're watching?
I know.
Has it been more than a year?
I know we discussed the timeline in prior episodes. I don't know if...
Yeah, I can't remember.
If one of you can access the notes and the different outlines.
I'll double check. Brian, I'll double check.
Screens. Because I'm podcasting from a basement. I don't have... And I'm on my small laptop. It's harder to look up this stuff. So, I had some questions about that as well. Let's talk a little bit about Marouk. I loved the fact that he was already in the room and just in the shadows. And the first we get of him is like the hand on Lawson's shoulder, I think is what it was. And then the lighting and everything like that. So that was just a really great I was a little surprised that the lieutenant, that seems like a low rank for somebody coming in for, what's the lieutenant's name? Blake. And they certainly make him look like a not nice guy, no matter what. So, yeah, the fact that the Empire are coming straight in to the police department, right, you just know that that's going to mess up Lawson. And so, yeah, for Iko Diodaki then to make that choice about going to him. But then, of course, yeah, as we said, he doesn't have a lot more choices. Two Boots is kind of tripping. Jean?
I mean, that was the next thing I was going to say.
See, I know you. I know.
Yeah, you do. Two Boots. Nah, I don't want to immediately throw him, you know, throw Two Boots off the ledge. But
throw him in the trash compactor.
I don't know if Two Boots is playing into a role right now, because I kind of got that feeling that he was just, you know, going along to get along. But then it was just like, wait a minute. I think he's really believing that everything is going the way it should be going. So yeah, I was of two minds watching him interact with Riley, because at one point I was just like, I think he's just trying to get this kid out of here quickly enough so no suspicion can be, you know, thrown his way. But
he does give him a pretty hard shove in the back.
Right.
And when he's pushing him out.
But then there's also the interactions where it seems as if, you know, Two Boots actually believes in what's happening, that it's a good thing. So I'm confused a little bit by how Two Boots is reacting to the Empire's presence right now.
Right. He's like, oh, look, they're being so generous with their resources.
Thank heavens they're here.
But then when he tells Riley that his dad may or may not be released, you know, and then it's like there was almost like a faster pace. Like, you got to get out of here as he was saying that.
Right.
So I'm a little confused as to where Two Boots is right now.
Okay.
I'm hoping Two Boots goes the right way and doesn't have to be reprogrammed. I'm hoping the programming that Two Boots has allows Two Boots to make the correct decision to see that the Empire stinks without, you know, someone.
Yeah, they left some crumbs for a possible turn for Two Boots.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, like,
and it wouldn't be the. Yeah, and it wouldn't be the first time like a droid comes to save them. No,
absolutely,
them,
yes. You know? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So I'm invested in the Two Boots situation right now.
Right. Really quick, back to, I know we're kind of swinging around here, but something just reminded me about the interrogation scene. I want to put, we're going to put Alicia's Inquisitor stuff towards the end here when we talk about Marok a little bit more. But I noticed there again a couple of times I mentioned this last episode and a couple of times this episode, and especially when Lawson walks into the interrogation room, in the music there was like a synth sound that gave me like hardcore Andor vibes again. I don't know if you guys picked up on it this time or not.
I heard the music this time.
Yeah.
I did hear the music this time.
And then seeing the scratch marks on the desk, right? That really brought me back to Bix's interrogation and the use
the
of
torture.
And that side and that stuff. So I love how they're bringing in these dark elements. Like, this is a kind of a Star Wars storytelling that I've been, you know, you could have multiple lanes. Star Trek does this, I know Star Wars does it as well, but I want Star Wars to do it more better, I guess you could say. And I really want them to lean into for the adult content. And this is really leaning into that. And the fact that we have divorced parents or separated parents here, we have torture here, we have, you know, not just faceless bad guys, but like real evil stuff going on. And that is, I think, just an important storyline to not forget, is how bad the Empire is and how cold-hearted they really are at their center.
Well, you know, just quickly, David, you mentioned Star Trek. It's kind of interesting because I think Star Trek was really geared toward adults.
Mm-hmm.
And Star Wars, yeah. And Star Wars from the get-go was kind of, although a lot of adults liked it, but
it was four quadrant. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, you know, a lot of kids just, you know, we're the same generation. We just got sucked into the toys and the, mm-hmm. and the, you know, everything. And I think they got shackled a little bit with the kids until they kind of started to really think outside the box a little bit.
Right. And until we get, you know, stuff like Andor.
Yes, exactly.
Right? And I would say Bad Batch a little bit. I think there's some deeper mm-hmm. storylines with Rebels. Like, and again, I'm not a Rebels expert.
There is.
You know.
Absolutely. Yeah, there is. That's right. Yeah.
They start to play with it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think what they did was dip their toes into that type of storytelling with the animation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Before exactly. they brought it to, you know, live action.
Yeah.
Right.
So the animation had been going in this route, you know, for 20 years. And now the live action is catching up.
And I really, so, you know, you can say what you want about Tony Gilroy and his personal attitudes towards the Star Wars property, but he did kind of break through a wall here in terms of being irreverent towards the canonical side of things, and then just saying, I have a story to tell about this, these spies and these people who are putting everything on the line to fight the Empire. And telling that story, God, was it a year ago that Andor season two was? It was. I think we were watching it like right about now.
Yeah, right about now.
Yeah, that's right.
So this is the first real property that was produced after the ending of that. I would assume because we did have the Acolyte, but that had been in production, you know, prior. So we're living in a post Andor world.
That's right.
And so we can sort of take benefit from how that the influence of that show is. We're going to see. It's going to be interesting to see in properties coming forward. Where do we pick up those different elements that they've that new territory that Andor broke open for us? Let's talk a little bit about. Let's see. I don't know where we want to go. Because I want to talk about the mom. But I also want to talk about, you know, something we didn't talk about with Iko Diodaki is the fact that Bro tried the mind trick and it didn't work. I mean, it worked on the trooper, but there's a network of troopers, right? And the other bro, the other guy picked it up.
Yep, exactly. I love that. I love that part. It's like there were just too many stormtroopers around to make that work. It's like, whoops. Right.
Are these guys technically TK troopers? Because they're a little bit different, and I don't know the evolution and history of the troopers coming from clones to human conscripts and what their different names are. And then somebody said something in this. I thought I heard a trooper, maybe it was last bank of episodes, somebody referred to a TK number. And I was like, oh, okay, is that?
It might have been episode 5. There were five or six. Yeah, they were communicating with one another. So I did hear that as well. Yeah, TK was in the front. Yeah,
I'm sure there's some, you know, or I don't know if we'll see where we go with the next set of episodes, but it would be interesting to get a little bit of through line of how troopers, because you can tell the era based on the armor and the whether they're clones or, you know, stormtroopers or what have you. So that's sort of a historical through line. Let's talk about the mom a little bit, Drea. And what are your guys' theories? Jean, do you have any personal theories about what's up with Riley's mom?
Yeah. I think she might be a double agent.
Okay. Did you read my comment in the Discord before you said that?
I did not.
Or is that yours?
I did not see it.
Okay. Because I laid down that wager the moment that I was watching the episode. I paused the episode, I dropped it, and I said,
I didn't see.
She's a deep cover agent. So we're in the same place. We're in the same mindset.
Okay.
Brian, are you in on this bet or are you?
I see the issue, like I'm thinking like backstory. So we know Lawson is a bounty hunter. So I'm thinking
was a bounty hunter.
But it's like, okay, so your wife, it's like, so the Empire maybe might know that he was a bounty hunter. Mm-hmm. Maybe, maybe not. And if so, would they even bring her in? But so there is, because their relationship with him,
he's tainted her. His taint has to affect her.
Yeah.
And her, wherever she is in the power structure.
Yeah. That's why I was thinking like a scientist, something that has no huge, maybe some security clearance, but not super high security clearance. We don't, we know it's not, you know, doesn't have the white uniform that we see for the internal bureau. Right. So, but it's kind of that drab, you know, there's no insignia.
There was no rank insignia on the chest, but she had a little badge or an ID thing or something on her waist.
Yeah. She could be.
So that was making me think at civilian administration or scientist. Yeah. Like I was kind of going that way as well.
Maybe data, maybe, you know, technology.
What if she's in like Palpatine's administrative setup or something like that?
You know, the thing that made me think that was it was so low key.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it was so.
Why are they introducing her to us?
Yeah. It was almost like a secret that she was talking to
her son.
Her son.
Her son. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It felt like she was somewhere in a corner, huddled, hushed, you know, trying to get a broadcast out. That's the feel that I got watching her. And that's why I think maybe there's more to
what's going on
with her than what we originally have been, you know, fed.
And she was really clear. Do what the troopers tell you. Follow the orders.
Yeah, you're right.
Not cause problems. Just be insignificant. Do not draw attention to yourself. Like, I'm paraphrasing a bunch here. But she was like super specific of, not like, oh, don't worry, honey. Everything will be fine. The Empire, you know, whatever. She was like, listen to me. Do not pop your head up above anything, which, well, episode 6, you know, well, so much for that plan. But she was like, and she got down on his level and was like, she was giving him the talk. Like when you encounter the Empire, do what they say, do not F around. And that was just like, that was so out of character at so many. And then what you're saying as well, Jean, like that whole picture was like, oh, this is kind of an innocuous, you know, I'm talking to my mom, but there's just signal all over. They're signaling to me that there's stuff, there's more than what we know here.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Yeah. And I keep thinking that she has either seen some very horrible stuff on her side, and that's why she's giving this message to her son. It's like, I know what they can do. I've seen it.
And then how did they get together? So there's a whole lot of questions, a lot of great, interesting questions. Let's swing back to Marok real quick before we do the lore bomb. So here we are. We're showing, at least I'm showing my lack of knowledge again. There's some, what is it, psycho telemetry or psycho something, like when you can read, the force users can read the past. There's a whole thing of Marok was, he could hear the battle and he could read the signs. And I think we saw that. Did we see that in The Acolyte? Or was it in Ahsoka? No, it was Ahsoka, right? She could kind of envision the past using the echoes of the past. You know, she could read them through the Force. So I really liked how Marok was using that.
Yeah, that was a great scene with the temple. And seeing the Order 66 battle. So it's pretty devastating. Devastating.
Anything else you guys got before we get into the lore bomb?
Let me just get my coffee.
Okay. get some calf.
let me get comfortable.
Right. Got your notes out?
Yep.
Okay, here we go.
Okay, lore bomb time. So, yeah, the reason the person triggering this, the character triggering this, is Marek. And this is his description from StarWars.com. Marek was originally created by Dave Filoni for the first season of Ahsoka, in which he meets his end. He later showed up in the Star Wars Tales of the Empire episode Devoted. Maul Shadowlord spends more time with Marek, giving us a deeper look at his wraith-like nature. And I'm wondering how much we're supposed to read into this wraith-like aspect. Indeed, the first time we saw this character was on the TV show Ahsoka, which is set 26 years after the events of Maul Shadowlord in 9 ABY. From the moment we saw him in the promotional material, there was so much speculation about this character, and the fact that he was obviously looks like an inquisitor, but he was working for a Night Sister who, granted, Morgan Elsbeth is an Imperial Night Sister, but still. And then poof, literally in a cloud of green smoke, all of that is gone. So they've since been going back and filling in more of his backstory. So the earliest point we know in his timeline so far comes from Tales of the Empire, the animated series, the episode Devoted, which is set during and just after the Jedi Purge of Order 66, so 19 BBY, so about 2 years before Shadow Lord. And this was the episode where Barriss Offee, who was imprisoned by the Jedi, she was on trial for being a traitor to the Jedi, she is set free during the Purge, and she is invited to join the Inquisitors, which she does. And we see Marek briefly at the end with her and a couple of others swearing their allegiance to the Grand Inquisitor's boss, Darth Vader. Now, we also learn from seeing him in this episode that he seems to also have a talent for psychometry. This is a skill that's coming up more and more in recent Star Wars storytelling, where they can get senses or echoes of events just by touching things. So he's one of the Inquisitors. He is First Brother. And in Legends, the Inquisitors were also Dark Side Force sensitives, but they were more modeled directly after the Spanish Inquisition, and the way they looked and the way they operated was more like that. This version of the Inquisitors, the canon version, was introduced in Rebels, and they are from Sidious's Inquisitorious program still, Sidious's plan was to recruit Force sensitives, mostly former Jedi, to gather and eliminate other Force sensitives. So they are called the Red Blades. You can see why they have these spinning lightsabers. And that is also to give them an advantage, because often they are facing off against Jedi Masters, although they were not Jedi Masters themselves. So this is a bit more like using a machine gun instead of a regular gun. Instead of a rifle, although it was used, I have to call out to infamous effect to fly in a helicopter style in Rebels. That makes me laugh at the light, but I understand why people hate it. Anyway, so they track down the Jedi who have escaped, which would be why they would be after, obviously, Devin and her master. Their other function is to be part of what's called Project Harvester, which is gathering young Force sensitives for Imperial training. So children with Force sensitivity, they get to them. And meanwhile, there is a group, the Hidden Path. They are trying to collect the Force sensitive children and smuggle them to safety. So the question arises, you know, whenever Inquisitors show up, will the path show up? Will Devin try to use the path, for example? This could be what the path is more, could be the topic of a future lore bomb, depending on which way this season goes. But it's sort of like an underground railroad for Jedi. And I should note, it is where we last saw Ventress from Tales of the Underworld, although we're not sure whether those episodes are set before or after Shadow Lord.
Entrance watch.
Anyway, the headquarters of the Inquisitors is the Fortress Inquisitorius, which is an underwater fortress on the saltwater moon of Nur in the Mustafar system of the Outer Rim. So they are not far from Vader's lava stronghold. If you played Fallen Order, then you have explored the Fortress Inquisitorius. It's also shown in Tales of the Empire and the Obi-Wan Kenobi show. At this point in the timeline, technically, it's not yet the main headquarters of the Inquisitors, but it will be a few years from now. And considering that fact only comes from books and comics, I wouldn't be surprised if they ignored that and just said it's the headquarters now. So the head of the Inquisitors is the Grand Inquisitor, and you get to see a lot of him in the Vader comics and Tales of the Empire, in the book Inquisitor, Rise of the Red Blade, which has a lot of Inquisitor lore in it, in the game Fallen Order, in the show Obi-Wan Kenobi, and the Grand Inquisitor dies in Rebels 13 years after Shadowlord in the timeline. So he's still alive and well at this point. And the other Inquisitors are, there's first brother is Marek, so that's who we see in the show now. Second sister was Trilla Suduri. This is, you get experience her full story during Fallen Order, so I won't say anything more about that. If you haven't played that game, I keep bringing it up because like they keep making it relevant to this show, but it's also just an incredible game. Anyway, third brother, we know nothing about him other than he exists or existed. We don't really know where he fits in the timeline. He's just mostly shown up in reference books. But we have also had a third sister, Reva Sivander, who was, her story is told in the Obi-Wan Kenobi show. So that begs the question, did third brother previously live and die and was replaced by third sister? Or, yeah, how does this work? I would guess it makes sense if one dies, they are replaced. And that would explain why Barriss Offee is sworn in at the same time as a first brother and 11th brother. So let's see if they play more with that. Now we have a fourth sister is Lynn Rakash. She was a former Jedi recruit. She's the one who recruited Barriss Offee in that Tales of the Empire episode. And she also appeared in Obi-Wan Kenobi. And Barriss Offee later helps her find her way back to the light. I'll just say that in the Tales of the Empire episode. There's fifth brother, who was seen in the Darth Vader and Inquisitors comics and the Rise of the Red Blade book and the Obi-Wan series and Rebels. These are the places where Inquisitors are most likely to show up. The name and species of fifth brother is unknown, but he's sort of like a Frankenstein dragon-like looking guy. And he is ultimately killed by Maul in Rebels 14 years after this. Sixth brother is named Bill Valen, and also in Rise of the Red Blade, Vader comics, and this in the Ahsoka novel, this is who she kills to, and she takes his kyber crystals and purifies them to make her new white lightsabers. So in the Ahsoka novel, sixth brother is who Ahsoka gets them from. Next, seventh sister is Emiri Allen, like Barriss Offee. We don't know her name, though. She is in the books and the comics, and she tried to take over in Rebels when the Grand Inquisitor was killed, but then she is also killed by Maul. Eighth brother, also in the books and comics, he was also part of this attempted failed assault on Maul. He's a Tyrellian Jango jumper by species, and he's not killed by Maul. He just makes a big whoopsies and falls to his death when trying to escape Maul. Ninth sister is Missana Tide, a Doeton. And if you've played the Jedi games, Fallen Order and Survivor, she might haunt your dreams. But spoilers for that game, Cal Kestis will kill her 8 years from now. Tenth brother is Prosset Dibbs. This is Amira Luka, so he has no eyes. He sees through the Force. I think I did a lore bomb about this during Andor. But anyway, he's in Rise of the Red Blade and the Mace Windu and the Vader comics. And he is actually dead by the time of the Shadowlord series, killed by clone troopers. So we could see a 10th somebody replacing him. Now, 11th brother, we do expect to show up in this show just based on promotional materials. He's the one with the bird-like skull mask, fittingly called the Crow. He was also at Barriss Offee's indoctrination. And in the TV version, animated series version, Tales of the Jedi of Ahsoka's story, that is the one who she kills and gets the kyber crystals from that she purifies to make her blades. So to me, the most annoying retcon is that they wrote this kind of mid-episode over the excellent Ahsoka book. That's the thing I'm most upset about in Star Wars. And I guess if that's what I'm complaining about most, then things are okay. Now, we don't know who the 12th somebody is. Maybe that's Barriss Offee, because we don't know what her number was. So she must have been 12th then, 12th sister. We do know 13th sister. We, in many ways, know the most about her. Her name is Iskat Akaris, and she was introduced in Charles Soule's Vader series of comics, and she is the star of Inquisitor Rise of the Red Blade. It is all about her journey from Jedi to Inquisitor and how her story ends. I won't spoil it for you in case you want to read that book. It is actually quite a good book. It seems to be one that always gets high reviews across the board. So, okay, those are the Inquisitors, as we know them. We think probably only Marek and 11th Brother will show up, but most of them could. The question is, who was Marek calling at the end of episode 6? Originally, we know from the StarWars.com trivia that it was going to be the Grand Inquisitor, so that means that's not who he did call. It looks like we saw part of a hood. It feels unlikely that he would be calling Palpatine directly, but it could be Vader. I don't know. Do you think it's possible it's anyone else?
Damn.
Wow.
I'm sure he's recording off some notes, but like most of that knowledge is just up in her head.
Yeah.
Like that's just stuff she knows. Amazing. Thank you, Alicia, for I'm just getting so much like just how incredibly in depth this history of this world is. It's pretty wild. So
it is wild.
All right. So let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll pick up episode 6, and then we definitely have to talk about that question that Alicia has left with us. And we're back. Chapter 6, Night of the Hunted. Ducky explains to Lawson that he and Devon have survived a purge of the Jedi Order and must avoid the Empire to stay alive. Marek arrives at Lawson's apartment and duels Ducky and Devon. The pair manage to steal an Imperial gunship and escape with Lawson and Riley. They're chased through the city by other gunships and shot down. Maul confirms that Devon is still in the city and plans to intervene. He tells Vario that the deal is concluded and that Vario is free to leave and take his chances with the Empire. Vario chooses to remain with Maul. Lawson takes Riley, Ducky, and Devon to meet Soule, a former bounty hunter who saved Lawson in a past mission. He asks her for help escaping the planet, but the Empire soon arrives at Soule's casino. Lawson and Ducky hold off stormtroopers while Devon and Riley escape to a train platform. They're pursued by Marek, who duels with Devon on the train. Maul comes to their aid, helping Devon overpower Marek until they're able to get away from him. Marek contacts his master to confirm Maul's presence and that of the Jedi. Jean, this episode gave us not character development per se with Maul, but that scene with him practicing his forms was just such a wonderful thing to see in the Star Wars storyline. We've seen Ahsoka, I think, do some practicing.
Yes.
But to see this, to see a dark side user and just his calmness and his serenity throughout that practice, visually it was just stunning. I assume you have similar feelings and vibes as I do.
Yes. Because as I watched it, the first thing I thought of was Ahsoka. Right. And having these two, you know, light, dark, but these two characters who, for the most part, you don't get to see Force users practice solo. Like, they're always, you know, in our experience, at least for me, and what I can remember with Jedi, there's always someone else there teaching you the ways of the Force, right? Here we have, you know, a former Sith, a dark Force user, just practicing his stances, his strikes, just feeling the Force,
Yeah.
You know, feeling the Force. And that was really cool to watch. It was really cool to watch because there are two sides of this thing that we're all so enamored by from when we were children, right? At least for me, there are two sides of it, right? Two sides that you have to master in order to be who you want to be at the end of the day within this universe, within this galaxy, within these stories. We hardly ever get to see that.
Right.
But to see it from his perspective, that was the chef's kiss. That was great. That was great.
I don't know if either of you have practiced martial arts at all, Brian or Sean.
No.
And how important, so different martial arts traditions and from what different countries and languages, there are different names for them. But I think the English generally, in an English language, we might say kata, which is, I believe, Japanese and related to karate, or forms. And it's a set pattern of movements that you do, and you learn more and more of them as you progress. They get more and more complicated. Sometimes they involve weapons as part of the movements. Mm-hmm. But it really is the fundamentals of you practicing all of the different kinds of strikes and blocks into this flowing mindset. And it really is part of your physical, not only conditioning, but mental training.
Mental training. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to breathe and to remember to do things. And yeah, it's a set pattern, but that's how you get in touch with the flowingness. Because if you're just striking and kicking in a repetitive motion, it doesn't bring it all together. And it's by bringing it all together into that dance-like form that really sets it into your body and sets it into your mind. And there's a great scene in one battle after another where what's her name? I forget the kid's name, but she's practicing a form and my brain is so fried. I'm trying to think of Sensei, that actor.
Benicio del Toro.
Yeah. Thank you. Benicio del Toro. Says to her, like, breathe, you're not breathing. And then she starts breathing as she's doing it. And it's just like, oh man, that's so good. So to see Maul centering, because right around Maul right now is a lot of swirl. There's dissension in the ranks. The Empire is here. He knows that he probably is betting pretty assuredly that he's going to be encountering an Inquisitor before long. And so there's a lot of complexity swirling around him, and he needs to, if he's going to face off with an Inquisitor, he's got to be centered. And so he uses his martial practice to center himself mentally and spiritually and ground himself so that he can hold all this together. Brian, thoughts on this scene?
Yeah, it just shows you how the Force, even the dark and the light, they're all rooted in the Force. Mm. Both sides of that coin is rooted into that kind of same similar discipline of forms and breathing. And it's just the same. It's just how you take those advanced skills that Jedi and Sith both learn and how they channel that, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, like the both of you were saying, it's really interesting to see that how similar the Sith and the Jedi are.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Very much. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Very cool.
So let's talk a little bit about the Devin, Riley, Ico, Diodaki, and Lawson conversation. And I just love what Lawson says to Ico Diodaki, to Ed. He says, there's nothing simple about what you just told me. Like, motherfucker, you just dropped, pardon my language, I don't swear much in the podcast, but I could just feel Lawson's dread and just like, what are you telling me that there, like, and you're being hunted because of the, and you're showing up on my doorstep?
Where my kid sleeps?
Like, yeah.
What?
And Ico Diodaki and Ed is like, well, we're going to be, they're probably going to do the same thing to us as they're going to do to you. Yeah, my dude, it doesn't make it any better what you did. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Brian, thoughts?
Yeah, it's you know, and being a former bounty hunter, he gets it. Right. Yeah. He gets the danger. He's faced the danger.
Right.
And he left that behind for a stable job. He has a kid. It's like, this is not what I signed up for. And you are bringing everything that I left behind back into my life. And now I have more to lose than I just had before wandering around space.
Yeah.
So frustrating. You feel
so
it.
So frustrating. That's great. That's the way you just phrase it. So frustrating. Yeah. And in that moment, I'm watching him and I'm watching Docky. I'm like, Docky, man.
You trying to be all chill and wise.
Yeah.
Dispensing all this sort of wisdom.
No.
Like, no, man.
Sometimes you just got to say, I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'm sorry I did this to you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry I did this to you.
Yeah.
Where's the apology?
Come on. Come on.
Brian, you have a note in here too about the teens hanging out together. What caught you about the scene?
Yeah, that was great with Devin and Riley. It's like, go to your room, you know, both of you. And there they are. They're just, you've got this moment where there's just two teens hanging out. And, you know, there's a lot of backstory with them, but it's like, oh, are there's a little romance going to happen here, you know, little after school special.
I don't think so.
Yeah. And then we have the chaos, the usual chaos in Star Wars. Right. It's like, well, OK, let's just put a pin on that because it's not going to happen for a while, maybe, or at all. But it was just great to see, you know, I think. You know, in that scene, you really see Devin as, you know, more vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, yeah, you know, I couldn't quite figure out. I knew she was young, but I was wondering, like, how young, you know, and then when they were together, it's like, oh, yeah, you know, probably teenager. About the
same age.
Yeah, about the same age. Yeah, I thought it was a great scene.
And the way it worked was it sets up the difference between a Jedi Padawan and a regular kid. Hmm. And then when we actually get into the fighting, so we've been desensitized to a lot of violence in Star Wars, across Rebels, across Bad Batch, across, what was the other animated series? Man, I'm swinging
Resistance. A lot of misses here.
Clone Wars. Thank you.
Clone Wars.
And, you know, using your saber to knock laser bolts aside and, you know, jumping into fighters and cruising around, having a good old time, right? It's pretty mundane for those of us who've, you know, for people who've watched a lot of this content. But then you put in a regular couple of civilians. One guy, maybe, you know, the dad lost and seen a little bit of action, but Riley is not seeing any of this. And just how freaking insane it is to be able to use the Force, to have blasters being shot at you, to have hundreds of troops mobbing you. And so this quiet little chat between this awkward chat between a couple of teens, and she's just like, yeah, my upbringing was a little different than yours. And he's like, well, you're not from around here. You don't know what Bodekin is, right? Yeah. You know, my room's messy. Sorry, I got a girl in my room. I got to clean up a little bit. And then, yo, there's a dude with a red saber hunting you in the bowels of the city. And this is not normal, right? And so that for me, that this conversation sets up for the stakes to make us really feel what it would be like to encounter a Force user. Because most people don't. You're never going to run into a Sith. You're never going to run into a Jedi, except in extreme circumstances. And even then, if you ran into a Jedi, the likelihood of you seeing them use their powers or igniting their lightsaber, very, very low chance.
Exactly.
So suddenly to encounter this after you're like, what is going on? Right. So I thought that this was a perfect little scene to like really ratchet up that tension. And then I love the fact that they don't mess around. Marok is just going to jam his saber through the door and get it away. Like, I'm here, motherfuckers. Right. Like, I tracked you. Yeah. That was the whole point. I knew that these guys would be, you know, coming to you. And all of this is going according to my plan.
Exactly.
John, did this give you this? I don't know for me, but for this was like Rogue One, Vader vibes, right at the end of Rogue One. With the saber through the door,
it didn't get me that. It didn't hit that quite that hard. Didn't hit quite that hard, but it just goes to show you, for the most part, the Sith are really throughout Star Wars properties. They're really thinking.
Mm-hmm.
They're really plotting. And the Jedi are reacting.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part.
Right.
Yeah.
For the most part. The Sith
are... And that's when if you've lost that momentum, you're going to start to lose at the strategic level.
But I would say even going back to Clone Wars.
Uh-huh.
Hmm.
The Sith were thinking 3, 4, 5 steps ahead.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was so clear watching that scene, because Daki did the one thing that Marook was like, I know what you're going to do. I know what you're going to do, bro.
Right. Because I already saw the evidence of the lightsaber battle. Yeah. So I know that there are other Force users around here.
I know where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be right here. Hi. Right. And that's the difference between these two opposing sides, these two sides.
Right.
The Sith have always been the thinkers, not just brute force, because it is about brute force as well. Don't get me wrong. But they've always thought about how we're going to entrap, how we're going to make these changes, and what we need to do, the steps that we need to cover in order to get the results that we want.
Right.
And for the most of our Star Wars journey, the Jedi have not been able to do that.
Yeah, the Sith operates in the shadows. So you need more strategy
and
thinking
good point.
To operate than the Jedi.
It's by necessity.
Yes.
It's by necessity. They don't have the numbers.
Yes.
And they're looking for leverage points to, they got to find the precise point where things are weak or where they can use a lever to force something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And
I thought that was a great, great display of that. The differences between the two sides that, you know, we've watched for so many years.
Right.
And just this one little 15 seconds.
And then we get into this chase scene, right? The initial chase where they get shot out of the sky. Cause you start fighting troopers and the call goes out, they're going to throw resources at you. The fact that you think you're going to get away in this circumstance, it's like, nah, man, like you're in big, big trouble. And, so the pacing of I love the whole pace of the escape where we get these stakes and then we get to Sewell and then we have that little respite, just a very short respite before we get into the battle. And so the pacing of episode 6, I thought was just perfect. Like it felt really good. They didn't mess around and go, oh, look, you know, like da, da, da. No, they just, the triggers were there for the dramatic tension to keep ratcheting up, and it was just really, really well directed. And I don't know. Do we know what happened to Sewell at the end of this? I don't have mind where Sewell
didn't show. No, they didn't show.
Didn't. Yeah,
but she was ready to rock, man. She was the moment that trooper was not buying her story or that nothing was going on. She was like, "All right,
I'm out.
Let's go.
Exactly.
We're going to do this, and I'm out."
You know, and Lawson even was like, oh, well, you know, she says, be prepared to run. And he's just like, be prepared to run. Right? Yeah. Like no illusions about the fact that they were going to get, it was going to get messy really fast. So I really appreciate that sensibility that they're giving the characters, that they're not messing around with stuff.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
No, what I also found interesting as we, you know, get into the scenes that we all want to get into was just the fact that Riley has no skills.
None.
Right? None. He has no skills. He has no skills. So this is a father who has a very, who has a checkered past, has done some things. Mm. And has said to himself, you know what? I don't want my kid to be the way that I was. So I'm going to move to this faraway place. Hope that nobody ever, you know, comes into contact with me from my past, that my past doesn't catch up with me, that I can, you know, be something else, do something else, and give this kid a different life than what I had.
Right.
And
yeah.
Didn't prepare him for the eventualities that life could throw at you because he's wholly unprepared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And his mom is part of the empire, right?
Yeah,
it's like, malfeasance that he didn't prepare his son.
Yeah. They have here's not prepared their child.
Yeah. Here's the secret network of contacts that'll smoke. This is
how you use a blaster.
Yeah.
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 Right?
Right.
This is your blaster. This is how you use it. Mm-hmm. This is your armor. This is how you put it on.
Because one day somebody might come knocking.
Because that was their life, but they're trying to get away, you know, and we don't know much about his mom yet, but I can definitely feel that Lawson is trying to get away from that. Doesn't want his son to be part of that. And in doing so, I think makes it more dangerous for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Because now they on your ass. And your kid is out here looking like ass.
I'm surprised that he's holding it together as well as he is.
I mean, but there's nowhere for him to go. He's on that train. You can't break down now.
Right. Well, even before then, right? Even before all that, right? Just flying in the gunship.
Right. But
he's not freaking out. I mean, you know, he's not losing his damn mind. I mean, he questions
externally,
his dad.
Externally, we don't see the freak out. Right.
What was that?
Right. Externally, we don't see him freaking out.
Right.
Yeah. External.
We can only imagine what's going on with his emotions and in his head and all of these things. Right. And, go ahead, Brian.
And I really appreciate that they didn't do some kind of trope that he would like pick up a stick or something like his sports and then like hit a, you know, use his sports skills to knock out a trooper. No, that's good.
He has no skills.
Yeah, no skills.
He has no skills. He has no skills. He's grown up very privileged.
Yeah.
In a way that Devon has not.
I don't know. I got little vibes from the escape when they were escaping Sewell's. Of like the Death Star escape from 77. Did you pick up on that at all by chance?
Oh.
There were some sound effects.
No, I didn't, but
looking down, you know, from below.
Yes. Good call. Good call. There's some
you know, and like running kind of stuff. So there was a little just a little bit of, you know.
A little flash. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then when the Inquisitor's like walking down the stairs, it's shot in a very, it's directed in a very sort of horror sensibility where the shadow and the red light.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my God, you got a Padawan and an untrained kid facing an Inquisitor who is out for blood. I don't know, Brian, what were you feeling in that moment?
Yeah, that's where I was beginning to realize, and Alicia's lore bomb was great because I didn't appreciate that he was a first brother because this guy has serious skills. Right. He has serious skills. And the way he was just fighting and leading up to that big scene, it's like, you do not mess. This is not just this. You know, this is someone who's like kind of force sensitive and they just hooked on to the Empire to survive and make a living and maybe have issues with the Jedi. No, this is a different breed of Inquisitor here. It's right. It's great. Yeah. It's very chill.
I got really nervous. I was like, oh, this is scary.
Yeah.
This dude is scary.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You're a Padawan. And so that said, Devin.
She held up, man.
She held up. She is well trained.
Yeah.
She did not let, she did not drop her. What does Maul say? She only needs to prove her resilience. And she never gave
in.
Anything less than everything she had in that entire fight sequence.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what does that say about Devin? I'm really liking Devin's character. I don't know, Jean, are you grooving with
Yeah, I do. Devin? And in that moment, you know, I said I had to put a little respect on Doki's name, just a little bit of respect on his name because he trained her.
Sure.
So I have to, you know, say, okay, like he did a good job because
right.
as he said to Lawson, she's going to take care of your son.
Mm.
He was really clear and confident in that.
Right.
She's going to take good care of him. Don't worry about it. She's got this.
But
she almost didn't have it.
Yeah.
She almost didn't have it.
But Doki was training her, but it's what she has, not what Doki
has. Yes, yes, absolutely. Yes, yeah. It's not Doki. This is her.
Yeah.
But he trained her. So to be able to step up to her potential in this moment, right?
And not show one sign of fear when she's getting...
Yeah.
She's not getting her ass handed to her, but she is not... She was on a defensive fight.
Yeah, she was on the back foot from the jump.
Yeah, because he's the first brother.
He's a fully trained, force sensitive, force user, fully trained.
Yeah, yeah, and I couldn't help but think it's like, wow, she, you know, I wonder if she like trains like wherever they're hiding. Maybe the two of them are like going through forms together because she's not rusty.
No.
She is not rusty.
That's a really good point.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good,
point. Which makes the Maul scene all the more potent.
Right? Because, it gives that relief that they must be doing training on a regular basis.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to survive.
If you want to survive, you have to.
And so they did a little foreshadowing with the train coupling there as they were jumping. They give us a shot, and that's a nice little bit. So later when she cuts it, it's not a surprise for us.
Right, right.
But also, so we know that when Marek is asking her, where is Maul? Like, we know he's right there, right? Like, that's just, this is pulp, right? He's, you know, our shadow hero is going to be present. But apparently, I watched the new Rockstars video for this one the other day, and apparently they broke it down. And when there's a scene where they show the train sort of speeding by, and there's a cut scene in there, there's a little glimpse of Maul standing on a platform in the shadows. Oh. So it's so quick, it is literally blink and you miss it, but it's in our brains so that when he's there or for, you know, pixel peepers, you can go back and you can actually see that, you know, because Spybot was feeding him location information, right?
Yeah.
So that he could be there at the right spot.
Yeah.
But they actually provided us the moment when he jumps on the train, or, you know, he's jumping on the train as it's going by. So I really like that. I like that for the direction. They're thinking very carefully about the storyline and how the storyline is connected and how it unfolds. And they're using very traditional methods. Screenwriting methods, and I respect that. I appreciate it.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Of course.
So, as this was unfolding, it was about to unfold, when was the first instance of you saying to yourselves, come on, Maul, where are you?
I just knew from the beginning. I knew from the beginning.
I know you knew from the beginning he's going to show up.
But when did you say to yourself? That's not like me using psycho telemetry or anything like that.
When did you say to yourself,
basic plot.
Come on, Maul, let's go. Where are you at? When did you say it?
Yeah, right when he had her, when he was like, hey, where's Maul? And I'm like, oh, he's right there. He's right behind you. Tap, tap on the shoulder.
I'm not going to lie to y'all.
Where
as soon as that train hit the tunnel, I was like, "Yo, where more all at?" I said, "You got to come save her."
Exactly.
I already knew what was going to happen. I'm like, "Yo, you got to come save her, bro."
But that's the tension. That's the dramatic tension.
Where are you at?
Yeah.
It's tension and release. That's what drama is. And so they set up the tension, and when's the release? Maul shows up. And you're
here I am, like saying to myself, when is this Sith going coming to save the day?
Yes.
Right? Like,
and Sith, our hero.
Yeah, exactly. And the moment that the fight is over and she turns to him and you're like, oh, and he's like, no, we're good. Like, oh, it was so perfect. Yeah. It was so perfect. I am not your true enemy. You have now met your true enemy. So what are you going to do about it? Right?
Yeah. I'm not going to fight you. I don't need to fight you. That's not my
I don't want to fight you.
No, I don't want to fight you. No.
And then he is magnetic. He is hypnotic. And what do they do visually? They frame him in that tunnel with all of those light pulsing things going by. And so we're like, we're just drawn into his calm and serene face that we have just fallen in love with from the moment that he showed up in the movies.
And he has this thing. He does a squint. I don't know if you've seen it. It's like two or three times. He'll close his squint at you. Mm-hmm. And they do a kind of close up when he does it. It's like his little signature thing going on. Yeah. And it's like, I love it. It's like,
Yeah.
I'm looking at you. I can read you.
Right.
So good.
And then this whole fight was just such a great rhyming with the Duel of the Fates.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
With that, you know, that main scene of him where he really sort of joined the pantheon of amazing characters. But this time it's him and a Jedi against an Inquisitor who's even more evil than a Sith. Like, what is going on? Right. So good.
And, you know, as I'm thinking of Maul, right. And, when this is spoilers, right? When
Tony, it's called spoilers from the very beginning.
Okay, so when he duels Obi-Wan for the last time, and Obi-Wan is holding him as he's dying, and he says, "He is the chosen one." Is he the chosen one? Mm-hmm. When he's looking at Luke at that point, and he. He dies saying, though, is that the chosen one, right?
Yeah.
Is that like a... Is there redemption? Because this Maul I'm seeing in this show is that Maul at the end.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the Maul that we first encountered. He's not the Maul that's in Clone Wars. Yeah. He's not the Maul that started the Death Watch that took over Mandalore. He's not that Maul. This Maul who's talking to Devon and that Maul on Tatooine, those are bookends to me at this point.
Huh.
Yeah. Well said.
Like his journey.
Yes.
Within the Force.
Yeah.
His journey within the Force, right?
Right.
Where he started at and to where he ended. Because when he, in that ending, I felt him. I felt for him in that moment. The first time that I watched that series and, you know, Obi-Wan did it, I'm like, damn. His last words were.
Go back and pick that up again.
Because he didn't say, fuck you, Obi-Wan. I hate you, Obi-Wan. Mm. You know, his last words was like, oh, is he the chosen one? Like, is he going to make it? It was almost like, is he the one who's going to make things right?
And he's speaking to him like an equal, a brother, like a fellow professional.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, we're both Force users. We're both in the game.
Yeah.
I'm done, but Yeah. Like,
I have to, like, this is something I've been watching the show, and this is something I've been thinking about. And I'm starting to think these are bookends.
Huh.
I really am.
Yeah, that's really
interesting. I might be wrong, but I'm starting to lean in that direction with how they're presenting Maul.
And, you know, Filoni and co, they have all this up in their, you know, in their head, and they have access to all of this stuff. And if they want to go, oh, let's, hey, there's this thing that I was thinking about, they can pull up that tape in an instant, right? And check what's there and do what's.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, like, and if they're thinking holistically like this and complexly and giving characters nuance, that's them maturing, and that's the property maturing.
Yeah.
And taking this richness and actually saying, let's not make two-dimensional, good, bad, mustache-twirling, white hat-wearing characters. Right.
Yes.
And let's take a really morally complicated character like Maul and do something interesting with him, not just make him a foil, you know, for the good guys.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't have an answer to this, but I'm wondering, it's like, if he gets an apprentice at this stage of his journey, what would it look like? You know, it may be, I'm wondering, it's something different than just Lord Vader and the Emperor, right? It would be something different, right? He wants something different, even though he's evil, Jean, your words really make me think about, you know, if he gets an apprentice, what is he going to do with that apprentice? Maybe something different. I don't know. Is that crazy talk?
That's the beauty of this show.
That's the beauty.
This guy, and we know what he's up to. We know
what
he's
up to. We know who Maul is. You know, we know who Maul is. I'm not you know, diminishing who he is or taking away or trying to rewrite his history or who he is.
Right.
We know how evil Maul is.
Yeah.
Right.
But I'm just saying, in those two moments, there's something else there.
But that's complexity. That's nuance. That's and that gives us depth and richness to explore.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, Brian, who was Mara calling at the end?
You know, very in-box thinking. But when I saw the hood, I thought of the Emperor.
Sure.
Because, he wears the hood, and that's his deal.
Right, they know that. They would plan that.
Maybe they're throwing us something, you know, a red herring at us, probably. So I never really thought it was Vader, but...
And I don't think the Grand Inquisitor ever wore a hood.
I don't remember.
So it'd be weird.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, who else would he be calling? Like, if you think through the list of, like, who could it be? Jean, do you have...
At the end of the episode, I thought it was Vader.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
At the very end of the episode, I thought it was Vader.
Hmm. And but then, are you sticking with that?
It's not that I'm not sticking with it, but I can see... I can see how Palpatine would undermine Vader
by going out of the chain of command.
By telling his Inquisitor, call me directly, do not call Vader.
Yeah.
Just to fuck with Vader's head.
Yeah. All right. All right. Right, because in Brian's game here, psych out, double psych out. I know that you're going to, I know.
Yeah.
So we are actually just going to make it Palpatine.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
Nice.
Because I was on the Vader train too, right? I was like, you know, it'd be cool to see badass Vader, right? And we're getting lots of dark corridor, you know, coded red, you know, Rogue One and end of Rogue One movie Vader fight scenes. But I like how you're thinking, Jean. That
And just quickly, there's that personal relationship between Palpatine and Maul.
Yes,
he's right. It's like that was his former apprentice. Yeah. So there's that connection, which made me think it was Palpatine.
All right. All right.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it. Cool. Well, I think that wraps us up. Alicia, thank you so much again for the excellent lore bomb and your fresh takes. I know I'm making an assumption that Alicia is pretty excited because we got a date drop for Silo season 3. I don't know, Dijon, and did you guys, Brian, you're on the Silo train too, aren't you?
Yeah. 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 I it's a great series.
Yeah. Early July. I think it was July 3rd. I think they said.
Yeah, that sounds right. I know it's definitely early July. Yeah.
Yeah. So summer's going to be busy.
July 3rd. Yeah. July 3rd.
July 3rd.
July 3rd. Okay. Yep. Yep. So it's going to be a hot lore summer. We got hot lore summer coming at us. Temperature just went up. The forecast just went up a notch.
Yeah.
Jean, how was your, you guys did a episode on.
Yeah, we did. Not yet. No. Punisher comes out.
No, sorry. Not Punisher.
We just Daredevil. Did Daredevil.
Daredevil.
Yeah. We just did Daredevil. So you'll have another episode from us after next week's.
Okay.
And then,
Should I get in on it? Is it, I was like.
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's good.
Absolutely. That's
good.
All right.
Yeah. I just saw episode 5. It was great.
Yeah. I think it's.
Did they, did they do a dump?
No.
Or is it weekly?
It's weekly now.
Weekly.
Okay.
Weekly. Right.
It's weekly now.
Okay, cool. Brian, we have an Into the West episode coming up soon.
We do. We're bringing Marilyn back for talking about Into the West, and then we'll also schedule the conversation. I think everyone's finally seen it, so looking forward to it.
I can't believe I never saw that movie before in my film history of life. That's crazy. It's a really good movie.
Yeah, it's in my top 10, I think, all time.
And, you know, I was tripping because I was like, is this... This film maybe wasn't the first to use some particular tropes, but I think this is the film that set these tropes into concrete for use, like the surveillance van thing and you know, some other stuff.
Right.
There are some things where maybe it wasn't the first, but that it really was the second, which means that it put it into active play.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, this is a thing and it's going forward. So really cool movie. I'm really excited to talk about it.
Excellent.
Either of you guys watching The Boys?
I haven't started the new season yet.
Yeah.
I'm watching it.
How is it?
It's the best season they've had in 3 seasons.
All right. Well, Radioactive Ramblers are covering that. So hit the link tree to go find their show. And they've got us covered on that. I know John and Alicia should have a One Piece episode out pretty soon covering that. And I believe the Project Hail Mary podcast is also in the pipeline and will be out before long. Other than that, did either of you guys get a chance to hear the episode that we just released the other day on the Jurassic franchise?
I haven't listened yet.
Yeah, okay. Looking forward to it. Right.
So, and I just want to say this to everybody, say this to you guys, but to say this to everybody, just because Jurassic is in the title of this episode, this is a special interview with myself, Asher Albine, who's a journalist and a writer and is the co-head or whatever of online magazine platform thing called Heat Death, which they publish amazing, really, really cool articles. And Tansy Gardam, who has the podcast Going Rogue, and she does these deep dives into film history, specifically troubled properties. And I've done a couple of episodes with Tansy. And this is the first time that Asher and Tansy and I got together. This was recorded last October. And we use the Jurassic movie franchise as a centerpiece, but it's not only about the Jurassic franchise. It's about science. It's about social norms and how they're encoded, embedded into properties. It's about how mega franchises are these ginormous cultural icebergs and the money and scale of these things and how they move across the landscape. and about so much more. And so you're like, I'm not so much into the Jurassic films. No, don't miss this conversation. Because it's like really a wide ranging where we just circle around the Jurassic Park. We don't talk about the movies really that specifically. We talk about what's embedded and encoded in the movie franchise.
Nice.
From science and film, film history and franchise management and stuff. So that's out in the feeds. Go check that out. Go check out Heat Death. Go check out Going Rogue. And Tansy's new episode is or season is about to come out, and it's going to all be about the rise of Skywalker and the last half of the trilogy. And she's going to go deep into the film history. And if you've listened to any of your podcasts, you know how just on edge she puts you and just brings you into the world of just bizarre film history. It's so great. I'm so excited
to
listen to that season. So, as usual, lots going on at the Lorehounds. Let's give a quick shout out to our Discord server boosters: Aaron K, Tiller the Thriller, Dupe 71, Athena Aguilea, Lestu, Nancy M, Ghost of Perdition, Radioactive Richard, and Adrian. They all support the Discord server boost. They boost the server, so we've got more features and more fun stuff. We've got a new server tag, kind of like a lapel pin you can put on your identity. So go check all of that out. And we are independent podcasters, and we get a little bit of money from advertising, but really our operations are sustained and lifted by our subscriber community and our lore masters, who are our top tier subscribers, are really our foundation. They're our floor, and we couldn't do any of this without them. So we always like to give a shout out to Samartian, Michael G, Michelle E, SC, Peter OH, Nancy M, Duve 71. Who's this Brian 8063 guy that keeps showing up on the list? Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Andre B, Kwang Yu, Nathan T, Sub Zero, Aaron K, Dally V, Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W, Lestu, Jeffrey B, Elisa U, Ben B, Scott F, Stephen N, Julia F, Cully S, Il Mariel, Rocky Zim, Jessica A, a Red Zippy. I hear her on an Into the West podcast.
Yeah.
A TCS, a Dopamini, LNR, Mrs. Tennant, AC Wilson, Eli W, Cassie K, Chumbaruni, Katilla, Josh Liu, Paint in BBX, Corey G, Quinch, Genie L, newest lore master, whoop whoop.
Yeah.
Forever last, never least, Adrian. Thank you all so, so very much for your support. And if you too would like your names listed in this hall of heroes, go to the link tree in the show notes and think about giving us a subscription. Makes a big difference for us. Jean?
Yep.
Yeah.
Thank you,
awesome. Gentlemen. We
thank
will
you.
See you
next week
for episodes yes. 7 and 8. Until then.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback to StarWars@TheLorehounds.com and get ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at Patreon or Supercast. Connect with us on Blue Sky. Links for everything in the episode show notes. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
When you buy LG, you get so much more than just an appliance. You get more done, more cost savings, more peace of mind, and more control. Because LG appliances are designed to do more. Like washers and dryers with AI tech to take out the guesswork. Refrigerators that fit in tight spaces and keep food fresher longer. Or ranges with precise induction cooking and easy cleanup built in. All with the style you want. And reliability you can count on, so you can get more from your home every day. LG appliances, so much more. Make life easier with LG. See the latest models and savings now at LG.com.